Welcome to Kingston Reid's Word to the Wise podcast series for HR and safety professionals.
Hello and welcome. I'm Alice DeBoos. I'm the Managing Partner at Kingston Reid.
And I'm Lucy Shanahan, a partner at Kingston Reid.
This is the first in a series of podcasts about how to manage investigations within New South Wales Health. In each podcast, we focus on the process as set out in the Managing Misconduct Policy, because really what we want to talk about is how to get investigations right when we're looking at employees and their conduct in the workplace.
And that Managing Misconduct Policy is the policy that applies, and it's the policy, or the process within that policy, is what is referred to in a number of other policies, like, for example, the prevention and management of unacceptable workplace behaviours. So in this podcast, we're going to focus on how you prepare for an investigation. And this is the first of four podcasts that we will be doing. So our next podcasts will look at actually undertaking the investigation, managing the investigation outcomes, and then what you do after an investigation.
That was a lot of mention of the word policy, Lucy. There's a lot of policy in the public sector. Why is it so important in relation to investigations?
Well, the helpful thing about the policy is that it really assists you to prepare for an investigation. And preparation is really, really important. In my experience, as I'm sure is your experience, Alice, the better prepared you are for an investigation, the easier it will be to manage the investigation. That is both in terms of the actual issue or question that you've been asked to investigate, but also in managing any of the twists and turns that inevitably come up in an investigation.
Yeah, that's bang on the money, Lucy. I find that more often than not, mistakes are made when people don't properly prepare for an investigation. And when we're talking about preparation in respect of an investigation, what does it actually mean?
Well, it actually means a whole range of things. And particularly for New South Wales Health, really the first thing you need to do is look at the policy and look at the obligations that are imposed on you as an investigator or as a person who is thinking about if a matter needs to be investigated, what obligations are imposed by the relevant policy. And actually working through those obligations will actually assist you to identify the issues that will come up during the investigation and will allow you to really properly consider the issues that need to be prepared for that investigation.
Because that's going to clearly assist in defending any claim, isn't it, that's made about the investigation or about the outcome of an investigation. And one thing I'd say here before we launch into the first step under the policy is have a think about whether or not you need to take any further steps. One big problem that we very, very often find is that people launch into an investigation or an initial review thinking that they're absolutely obligated to, without actually critically assessing the nature of the allegations and determining whether or not they fit within the policy in the first place. So that's a key part of preparation. But the first step in the policy requires that an initial review is undertaken. The purpose of that initial review is to consider the matter and to work out the next steps. So the requirements are set out in a policy, but in short, they are have a look at the risks to the health and safety of the patients and staff and whether they can be identified. They'll need to be called out specifically. You need to assess the credibility, the nature and the seriousness of the matter. Now, that's as far as practicable. So you're looking at the information that's in front of you and making a determination on the credibility, nature and seriousness. You should also be thinking about, as I mentioned before, whether the matter should be managed under this policy or another one. Is it, in fact, a matter which properly arises under the Managing Misconduct Policy, or is it something which properly arises under another policy entirely? There's also consultation in accordance with the policy directives that you'll need to consider, and any internal or external notification requirements have to be identified. In such a highly regulated environment, this is a really important step, isn't it?
It is. It is a really important step because, as you said earlier, It really forces the person managing the investigation to actually think about whether or not this is a matter that needs to be subject to investigation or not. Investigation processes are difficult. The outcomes are difficult to manage. So it's a really important question to consider. And if you do decide that an investigation is required, then it's really important that that decision can be justified by reference to the nature and seriousness of the matter. But that information in itself is really helpful, because ultimately if you decide that a matter is going to be subject to investigation, then the information that you glean through your initial review can be used to brief the investigator. The policy, as part of the policy process under the initial review, it stipulates that an investigation is only required in quite specific circumstances. And that's where an allegation is considered credible. And as Alice said before, you can only determine that as far as is practicable. And at this early stage, that can be quite difficult because you will have limited information.
You'd err on the side of caution though, wouldn't you, Lisa?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. The other circumstances where there is a requirement for an investigation to occur is where there is an indication of apparent misconduct, but also where the matter involves a child-related allegation, charge or conviction.
So in any other circumstances, it might not necessarily be that you have to launch into an investigation. It's a really important point, because if you don't have to do it, it's much better for you, much better for the LHD, and much better for the employees involved if you don't do an investigation. Now, it's a whole nother podcast to talk about what you can do instead, but at the end of the day, I really do want to stress that point. If you don't have to investigate, you just shouldn't be investigating.
That is absolutely right. I think we can both speak from significant experience that investigations, whilst they can have a really positive outcome in terms of changing the behaviour of employees in the workplace, the process itself is quite arduous. It can be very distressing for employees, and it often imposes more negative outcomes than positive outcomes. The other thing that the policy says, that an investigation has to occur where there is a significant dispute about the facts involved or where complex issues arise which require clarification. And as you said before, Alice, you'd always err on the side of caution when looking at that.
Yeah. I think particularly when you're looking at, say, allegations of potential unlawful behaviour, any allegation which compromises the safety of patients or fellow staff is really something that would warrant an investigation post your initial review. The other action that, of course, you need to undertake is to advise the staff member who's the subject of the initial review. We're going to call them the complainant and the respondent. So the complainant is the person who obviously has given you the complaint. The respondent is the person who's the subject of the complaint. Both the complainant and the respondent have got to be given assurances about the process, the protection afforded to them, how the complaint will be managed, and that they can access an EAP as well as independent advice. Again, hark back to the policy, it's all outlined there, but what we've found time and time again is that comfort, reassurance and structure around communication at the beginning of an investigation will go some way to try and ensure its success.
And if I put my lawyer hat on here as the person who deals with the bad outcomes of an investigation, I'd just say it's really important that all of these steps are documented and that you do them as efficiently as possible. Another really important step is to assess whether there are any ongoing risks that need to be addressed.
Yeah, efficiency is such an important point, and we'll talk about this a bit later when we talk about actually doing the investigation. But can I just make an observation that in the public sector, one of the biggest problems with investigations is delay. Now, we all understand that there are reasons for delay, but delay is such a problem when it comes to procedural fairness. It's a critical problem when it comes to actually assessing the evidence in an investigation and whether it can be relied upon. But at the outset here, if you're not acting quickly and communicating with the complainant and respondent, that can lead to an unfair result. Obviously, you need to have a look at the risks, as you said, but that's not just a once-off process. So you should be assessing risks, any new risks, on an ongoing basis as they might arise throughout the investigation. And suspension is one of those options, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. There are a number of ways that you can manage any risks that are identified, and suspension is certainly an option. It's a pretty serious option.
Yeah.
And generally, if an employee is suspended, they'll need to be paid for the period of the suspension. It's also, when an employee is suspended, it means that people in the workforce make assumptions about that person.
Yeah.
And make assumptions about whether or not the person actually engaged in whatever the alleged conduct is. And also, you don't want people sitting at the beach or in their living room being paid when they're not at work. So if you are suspending someone, it's really important that you do focus, get that investigation done as efficiently as possible.
Yeah, again, in the public sector, we've seen people who have been suspended on full pay while investigations take place for up to 18 months.
Yeah.
There is no fairness to the organisation in that. There's no fairness to the employees involved. So we say, consider two key things. Firstly, if you're going to suspend someone, generally only do it in circumstances where their continued presence in the workplace presents some type of risk. So there we're dealing with quite unlawful behaviour. It might be harassment or bullying. And when you can get the investigation done quite efficiently. Otherwise, keep the person in the workplace or look at alternatives. You could change your roster, couldn't
you? Yeah, or you could allocate that person to work in a different area of a hospital. So there are definitely other options that are available for managing the risks that you identify.
Yeah, and I would say, hopefully you agree with me, that suspension would generally be a last resort.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so assume you've done your initial review and you've made a decision to actually investigate. That's when you've really got to start to work hard, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. And this is where, if you get nothing else out of this podcast, take away the message that the preparation that you do is absolutely essential to the success of the investigation. And the first thing that you really need to think about is, who are you going to appoint to actually do the investigation? And that can be someone who's internal to the organisation or external, though I would say if you are looking at appointing someone internally, really look at the skills that they've got, whether they've got the appropriate skills to manage an investigation into the matter that's being investigated, and whether or not they actually have the capacity to finalise the investigation in the required time. Because people are generally employed in other jobs in the public service, not just as investigators. So you're asking them to take on a very time-consuming and often stressful additional job that they need to fit in around their regular functions.
Yeah. And partly your selection will be driven by the nature of the complaint as well, and who may be the witnesses and who is the respondent. The person that investigates obviously needs to be impartial. So if this is an internal person, it needs to be someone who has no involvement with the complaint whatsoever, who's not someone who has in prior times been complained about by the complainant. So you'll need to exercise some judgment there. And as we've said, and we'll keep repeating, delay is absolutely fatal. The policy recommends that an investigation be completed in 12 weeks. What I can tell you is that for an investigation to take 12 weeks, it really should be an extraordinary investigation.
That's right.
Most investigations that we would do can be completed in 1 to 2 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, there can be issues with interviewing certain people if someone is on leave or if someone goes on stress leave and they're out for an extended period of time. But there are ways to manage those delays. And if you find that there are delays in the investigation process, it's really important that you continue to keep the lines of communication open, both with the complainant and the respondent, so that everyone is aware of what the delay is and why there is a delay.
Yeah, that's right. And the first step is the investigator really needs to be across the material, don't they, Lucy?
Absolutely. So the very first thing that the investigator should be briefed with is a copy of the relevant policy. So that they can look at the policy and ensure that they're complying with the process. But equally, if you've done your internal review or your initial review, you're going to have information there about the allegations and about the information that you considered in determining why the matter needed to be investigated. And that's the sort of information that the investigator needs.
Yeah. The initial review, if done properly, should be of great assistance to the investigator. Of course, the investigator can be the person that did the initial review. There's no prohibition on that. But the investigator needs to be provided with enough detail so that they can head off and interview the complainant and the witnesses first. So really the most important thing to think about first is identifying the potential witnesses and planning the interview.
Yeah, that's right. And in identifying the witnesses and planning the interview, you need to think about the allegations and whether or not people, what sort of information the people that you want to interview will be able to contribute to the investigation. It's not the complainant might give you a list of 15 people that they want you to interview, but if upon your review you actually don't think that a large portion of that number of people will assist you, you don't have to interview those people. So it's really considering whether or not the potential witnesses will actually assist you in reaching a conclusion. And then you also need to think about what you want to ask the witnesses as well. What are the topics that you actually want to discuss and the questions that you want to pose to them?
Yeah. One thing that we didn't touch on is, of course, legal professional privilege and whether or not an external investigation is undertaken and procured by lawyers to protect the investigation with legal professional privilege. Now, under the terms of the policy, if an investigation is being done under the policy, then it's unlikely that it's going to be covered by legal professional privilege.
That's right, because it's more about making a factual determination. And if you think about what the policy says about the circumstances in which an investigation should be carried out, it's all about serious misconduct or a dispute about facts. So where that's the focus of the investigation, it will be difficult for it to be covered by privilege.
That's right. So the focus of this podcast and the coming podcasts are really on when you're undertaking the investigation yourself, what you need to consider and the tools that you need to arm yourself with in order to do it effectively. So that's all we have for this podcast. In the next one, we will take those principles of preparation and we will talk about how you actually undertake the investigation. See you next time.